I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the final stage of the Vuelta presented by Zwift. Now, this isn't the Vuelta recap. We'll do that in full tomorrow. This is purely the recap of Stage 21. Not much to talk about, really. Although, much, much better, I think, than the sort of Tour de France Champs-Élysées stage for a number of reasons related to the riders. 96 kilometers long, and it's a little bit uphill, this finish. It's not perfectly flat. Of course, no categorized climbs. There is a bonus sprint with about 47 kilometers to go. And before the stage, Enric Mas was in fifth, I think, in the points classification, only a few points behind Evenepoel and Marc Soler. And there's points, UCI points, available for third in that competition. So we'll see what happens at that intermediate sprint. But before we get into it, a word on our show partner, Zwift. As you will have seen plastered across the internet, the Zwift Hub has been announced, available on October 3rd in the UK, Europe, North America. Make sure you check out Zwift.com or Zwift's YouTube channel, or indeed the third-party independent reviews from the various cycling tech people on YouTube, for example, to find out more information about the Zwift Hub, and in case or when it becomes available in more geographies, you'll be up to date on what I think is the most competitively priced trainer value for money proposition in the market. So go and check it out. Or indeed, if you want to try Zwift, if you already have a trainer, go to Zwift.com for your free 7-day trial. But the showman of the day, Benji. Sorry. There's a ceremony. Is there anything? I'll out myself. I wasn't watching. Is there anything of interest that happened in the ceremony?
Obviously, they were celebrating the myth, the man, the legend, Vincenzo Nibali. Obviously, that's the name I'm going to pick out of the two. Out of Valverde and Nibali, both are being celebrated as their last Grand Tour stage here. So pretty cool to see that they've got this celebration going on for people that are retiring. Somewhat different to what Port and I think Dowsett had at the Tour of Britain, where their stages got cancelled, where they were supposed to retire. This is different for these riders. I think Valverde got to ride like an entire lap at the front of the race as well. Dennis did that as well. I don't know why, but that happened. Then the celebratory things where Quickstep takes a picture with Remco in the middle and so forth. But anyway, all that stuff aside, nobody crashed while celebrating at the back, so that's a win. And we didn't have severe crashes anyway. I think Craddock went down once, and that was mostly it for crashes for the day, so that's good. I think Nieuwenhuis as well at a certain point as well. But we came into the circuit. This is where it gets interesting. Let's be honest about it. This is where the tempo starts rising in the peloton, last 40, 50 kilometers, and we get a break of two. Luke Plapp, Australian NC. That jersey, oh, I love it. Australian NC jersey is the best jersey in the peloton. There's nothing anyone can do about it. And I'm sure Patrick's surprised that I'm celebrating the Australian NC jersey like that. But hey, I guess I like the colors. Anyway, outside of that, Julius Johansson also in there. So two riders with, I think, track history, both in the Branco here, both of them pretty fast on the flat if they put their minds to it. So they kept that up for a bit. They significantly opened up a gap until a massive 30 seconds at its peak, I'm pretty sure. But that's basically it for the breakaway. They kept that up for a lot of the race. And is there anything else we can say about this race before we get to the sprint, or is that kind of it?
Not really, just Mas, yeah, leapfrogging, winning the IS. That means he gets an extra 20 UCI points for Movistar. And that means Carlos Rodriguez didn't leapfrog Arensman.
Yes.
I don't think. Did he try?
But we might have made a mistake, or I might have made a mistake, by assuming that there's bonus seconds there. I'm not actually 100% sure if that intermediate sprint had bonus seconds in the first place.
I think
if
it they does. Did.
Oh, okay. Well, then he missed out, I guess.
Yeah. It says B on the LFR profile.
Oh,
on okay. PCS, so it must be a bonus gate. Anyway, the circuit here is unlike the Tour de France circuit where they do the big loop around the Arc de Triomphe. They don't rub off as much speed. They're still pedaling through there. This has a number of hairpin, not corners, sorry, hot. It's like a hot dog crit. It's like the Noosa crit. And then when I saw Luke Plapp doing well, I was like, of course he's doing well. It's like a Geelong Bay crit or a Noosa crit in the summer in Australia in the Australian National Champs jersey. So that's why the Australian National Champs jersey nearly won this race, and because he's got a big engine. But yeah, those corners, they rub off so much speed. The peloton has to brake so much and then kick out of it. Guys are literally almost unclipping at the back of the peloton in these corners. And they're both trackies, I think. And so they're in this praying mantis aero position. We ain't so snitching illegal. On it. I don't know. We ain't snitching on Luke Plapp on this podcast. Actually, this will go up. It's only if you put it on Twitter during the race, people get done afterwards. but I don't know. It's weird how, what's his name? Richardson got done for us. Slightly maybe worse position in Turkey or something last year for resting his forearms on the bars. This, they still got their hands semi-available to the hoods. I don't know. It's all a mess. And I'm announcing my retirement from something at the end of this podcast too, so stay tuned for that. But yeah, to wrap it up, Plapp and Johansson do really, really well. I think he's done a lot of race days this year, like his most for a long time, because he previously was doing Olympics and stuff. They get caught with 800 meters to go. Why is that important? Because Bike Exchange, Alpecin, and to Israel, other teams use their lead outs or riders, like I don't know who Israel are going for. Einhorn? Let me look. Goldstein. They were using their lead outs, Jumbo a little bit, Bora didn't have too many numbers, and UAE had a lot of numbers. They've been the strongest team of this third week. They have Oliveira, they have Soler. Apparently he said he was out on the piss until 4 a.m. last night. So maybe, like, he did a ripper lead out, so he should probably continue doing that if he wants to be, he could be a third last man. McNulty at Polance was pulling as well. How do you think, I don't know, where did Bex go, Benji? Do you think that's what it was? Do you think Plapp killed Bex and then Groves was left with no one in the last 800?
I think so, because I swear with like 3.5 kilometers to go, we got to this U-turn. By the way, these U-turns in this parkour, I fucking hate these U-turns, but they did play a decent role into the final when it comes to the peloton versus break. Because like you said, the tempo is gone in the peloton. It's so stretched out after those U-turns. And it also takes more time for new domestiques to get to the front after these U-turns. And it also spends more time for these domestiques after these U-turns to get back to speed. Same with the riders in the breakaway, of course. Now, they almost got caught. I swear they were in the wheel of Plapp and Johansson with like 3.5 kilometers to go in one of the U-turns. But then Plapp came out of the corner better than the domestique in the peloton, and there was a gap again. And I think Johansson decided to attack on the right side of the road then, and Plapp followed. Then the gap expanded a tiny bit again, and there was like 10, 15 meters again, 20 meters again. So after that U-turn that I mentioned, it's like it opened up again. So they kept that up until those 800 meters. And it's during that time that I saw, like, one by one, these domestiques coming off the front, those domestiques in the peloton. And I think that's where the teams that were doing that work indeed got not necessarily sold. Like, they spent their energy. They spent their bickies, like you said, back in the day.
Now. That's one of my frequent phrases.
But, yeah, I think I agree, basically. That whole discussion point, just to make sure that you know that I agree with your take. It's like that, I think, for the domestiques in the peloton. But when it comes to the sprint itself, the preparation for it, the strongest team to me seemed like Trek had multiple riders still in the last kilometer, right?
Yes and no. Like, I think they, UAE were on in the front, and UAE were at the front in the stage Roglic crash that Pedersen won. McNulty, these guys, okay, this isn't the Tour de France, even though the Tour de France, I mean, I might write a little primer on the death of the pure sprint train, but UAE have had a good lead out here. And relative to the other teams, they have three guys, Milano and Ackerman. We don't know what's going on there. From what I can see, Milano has been told you must sit in front of Ackermann. You may go for your own sprint, and that sprint will effectively lead out Ackermann. And Ackermann, you, if you can sprint from his wheel, you can sprint from his wheel. Unconventional, but it effectively, that is what a last man does. They just sprint early with their sprinter in their wheel. They just don't continue it for their own result often. Actually, they should tactically. Mercu often has. So they go Soler. Oliveira does a magnificent job. And because they were caught with 800, when Oliveira finishes pulling and Milano kicks, it's like 250 to go or 300 to go. And the reason I say Trek weren't as strong is because Kiesch, and this isn't his fault, he isn't Edward Turns or Jasper Stuyven. He's the setup man. He's the last man here for Pedersen. You can see him try to bring up Pedersen from the wheel of Ackermann because he's getting late here. And he can't because Milano's, his 15 second is so much better than Kiesch's 15 seconds. And he can't bring Pedersen into anything but kind of air early. And then Milano starts his lead out, keeps going. Ackermann's in his wheel. I'm like, all right, Pascal, it's time to come out of the wheel because I can see the finish line from the front of the shot. And he just never comes out of the wheel. Milano drifts from the right side of the road to the middle, straightens up a bit. Doesn't completely chop Pedersen, and he wins the stage with Ackermann not able to come out of his wheel. I've never seen it. I've never seen anything like this before when I've been watching cycling. It's different to a few examples. But yeah, how did you see this sprint, Benji, and Milano, what he did?
When it comes to Milano, it reminded me of that stage that you mentioned that Groves won. In that specific stage, I swear that Degenkolb launched early, and Milano launched next to Degenkolb basically and started sprinting, but Ackermann was not on his wheel. So he just kept on sprinting after his lead out itself. I swear he was launching from 400 meters that stage. And as a consequence, he ended up finishing fourth. And I think after that stage, the idea should have popped up in UAE's mind already of like, oh, this Milano guy, pretty fast. We've seen him in the past winning multiple stages. I think, I don't know which race it was, but I swear he won like two or three stages in like a week, 2 years ago or 3 years ago. When he just signed for this team. And yeah, it became clear that day already that Ackermann was badly at positioning, but I swear in this whole Grand Tour also didn't really pop out as much as we would have anticipated after that victory in Polonia, for example. Now today, Milano does his lead out and the sprint afterwards and holds off Ackermann and Pedersen on the other side. I will say though, 100%, Milano moves to the left and deviates towards Pedersen. And the only reason that it's not a dangerous situation is because Pedersen sees that and moves to the left as well. So just because Pedersen avoids the danger, the rule of the deviation rule cannot be applied, which is still an issue with the rule, in my opinion, because, yeah, like, I think this is relegation worthy, moving like that on the road.
Said I was announcing a retirement. I'm collecting my 30-year-old pension. I'm retiring from the relegation deviation police, at least for the rest of 2022.
There's barely any races.
Yeah, I know. It's a Tom Brady retirement. I'll be back. I'll do a holdout, leverage for some more money, and then I'll be back, or whatever, some better terms. I'll be back in 23. I can't fucking take it anymore. I just can't, like, we've said it 1,000 times. It's what Benji said. Because Pedersen isn't quick enough, he doesn't nearly chop himself or crash, so Milan doesn't get relegated. Should we have guys be sprinting in straight lines and have rules that encourage them to do that? Yes, that way people don't get crashed. But yeah, I can't say it's a relegation. I just can't, because it would be inconsistent with the rest of the whole year. So
yeah, but
in our ideal world. It would be.
Yeah. In an ideal world where the rules are applied evenly across the board, it is a relegation. But we've seen crazy relegations already this year. We've seen moments that are crazy that are not relegated. It's impossible to decide. Like, imagine if the rules didn't exist and you had to guess from the races where rules were applied what the rule was. I have no clue what the rule was.
Oh, no, it's easy. No, that's easy.
What?
Was the guy going to win?
Was it Bahani?
Is he famous? Does he speak English? Is he popular? Do people pick it up in the media immediately on Twitter? And does he actually have to, does he crash? That's a big factor. These are all very relevant to whether people get relegated. Not the actual, it's a tough one. Anyway, the bigger, I think, point is, should UA have been sprinting for Milano all along? Like, if this must be a bittersweet for Ackerman. You literally got beaten by your lead-out man from his wheel. You couldn't get out of his wheel, and he won the sprint, and you're paid probably a lot more than him. That's got to be the most bittersweet team victory. I feel sorry for Ackerman. I think he's still in good shape, but this is tough.
Yeah, like if I'm a sprinter and I see that my lead out is beating me twice in the span of a Grand Tour, I'm retiring, mate. Like, it's done. I can't handle this. Now, I don't want Ackermann to retire. He's done great things in the sport already. I remember that purple Ciclamino jersey in the Giro back in the day. I want them to continue that stuff, but this will be a hard day for him despite his teammate winning, and I hope that he takes a positive from it. And, like, there's worse sprinters in UAE. Like, they signed Hodge and he hasn't done anything all year. I think he's been injured for quite a while.
Yeah.
But he also wasn't going to do anything in the first place anyway. So, at least he was able to ride races this year.
I think Ackerman he still won a stage at Polonia. Yeah. I just think Milano is probably good enough to be a sprinter himself. He just won the stage in Madrid going from a million miles out. I would split them out and get someone else is to lead out for Ackerman, because to be honest, like, I always say, oh, Milano a little bit selfish doing this and that. It's like, well, if you know you are this good and you think you have the talent and you're young, like, you should go for it yourself, especially if the guy is not Philipsen or Jakobsen cleaning it up. The only other example I remember from I was told in our Discord before we recorded was of this happening, which was when I was but a mere child, was Stegemans in Tour de France stage 2, finished in Ghent. We watched it before we started recording, because this is the only other time where almost the exact same thing happened, because Cavendish could have let Pozzato win in that Tirreno Adriatico stage, but that was because there was a crash and he could have let him win. Here in 2007 in the TDF, Bonan couldn't get out of your man's wheel on Quickstep, and it's almost exactly the same, and they went 1-2 with the lead-out man winning. Let us know down below, historians, if you know of any other comparable scenarios. The top 10 was Milano, Pedersen, Ackerman 3rd, Turnison, Van Poppel, Groves, Wright, Tamino 8th, Turner 9th, Bulens 10th, McClay 11th. Where's Tim Merlier?
I'm going to stop answering that question at this point. Like, the guy's positioning was dog shit going into last kilometer. He was 30 wheel. The corner probably had an influence in it, but his position has been shit before it sprints this entire Grand Tour. So it's just that he's not brought to the position that he needs to be in. He needs Ricard, and Ricard's not there, and that's the answer to everything. He needs Ricard, and he's not going to have a Quickstep. So let's hope that Merlier has a Ricard person at Quickstep to fix his position before sprints, because otherwise it looks like it won't be a good day.
What's wrong with Bert van Leeuwenberger? Bert will be the man. I'm not joking. He will be. He'll be Bert. Steinle's actually not too bad. Steinle's a pretty good leader. Otherwise, we will wrap up all the jerseys, etc. tomorrow. Fashion analysis of all the, you know, people there afterwards. I can't comment on. But yeah, it's good to see sunny in Madrid, nice warm conditions. Good to see everyone's partners there. The Quickstep team looked like they were having, it just is nice to see the guys happy after basically a month away and then probably 2 months beforehand training away from their family, etc. Always nice to see. Otherwise, around the traps, there was, just quickly, also check out our podcast wrapping up the entirety of the Serratizit Challenge by Love Welter that we put up today. That was quite a good one, if I may say so myself. Otherwise, there was the GP de Formi, one of these 1.pro French races that put your hand up on the train or bus where you're listening if you knew that existed, where Lotto, Bike Exchange, Arkea, Alpes and Quickstep, Total, Asia Dessert, Trek were all there, but very important for Bex and Lotto for points. Arna Delis, I understand, crashed, but apparently, according to the Lotto thing, not too serious, and Ewan beat Groenewegen, but I didn't watch it too closely, Benji. Groenewegen, you said he went from a million miles out.
yeah, he went for a million miles out. It's like, when it, I don't know the specific point this happened, but in the last kilometer with like 700-800 meters to go, there was this corner where Oliver Naassen was doing the lead out ahead of multiple Lotto riders. And Naassen took that corner, but took it wide, as in he went first to the right. The Lotto riders came around him and then he went wide. So he kind of pushed riders off the wheel of Lotto. So they had to kind of sprint to get back to the wheel. And Groenewegen was on the left side of the road, so got pushed even further. So because of that, after that, Groenewegen had to move up on that left side. And I swear he went with like 350 to 375 meters to go on the left side, while at the front of the race, we had Ewan being led out by the Buist. And the Buist perfect lead out in that sense, bringing Ewan to the spot that he needs to be in. But, well, I'm saying perfect lead out, but Ewan was left at the front quite early regardless. So Groenewegen came around Ewan after going from way earlier and basically sprinted in front of Ewan until Ewan came around again. And that's how the race was won by Caleb Ewan here at the finish line of GP Fulmi. So yeah, Ewan did what he needed to do. He didn't start sprinting like crazy after the bus dropped him off a bit too early, but I think it was also because he noticed Groenewegen come up at that point. But yeah, UCI points, eh? That's the story of the day at this race, I'm guessing.
200 points for him, but it's 150 for Banks. So it's only a 50-point or so net gain on them. Israel, they're not scoring enough. And it's Ewan, like, I think he scored like 38%, 40% of his season's points in this stage today. More points than his second at Kerner, Russell Kerner, which is, yes, there's all that needs to be said, really. But I guess if he carries this form, Lotto have a chance, as long as Arnaud Delis is not injured. He is key to their survival. But that's the news from today. There'll be the Montreal recap later this evening with me and Alejandro. Then Benji and I will be back with the full Vuelta recap tomorrow. There's probably some gloating to do. I believe it was maybe our most successful from a stage-picking perspective ever. Not that we track it, but it felt like it. So I'll have to do the accounts for that this evening to make sure that is correct. But I hope you enjoyed it and all the recaps. Thanks to Zwift as always, and we'll see you with that tomorrow. Ciao.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.